This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. The Dual Language Program, or DLP, started in 2016 with 300 schools. These schools have the option to teach science and mathematics in English. And the fate of the DLP, which has since been expanded to over 1,000 schools, was briefly up in the air at the start of this school year when it seemed as though it will be phased out. In the studio with me today to explain what happened is Datin Noor Azima Abdul Rahim from PAGE, the Parent Action Group for Education. She has been an early and vocal champion of the DLP. Datin Noor Azima, thank you for being here. Before I get into the nitty-gritty of what happened, perhaps I can get you to remind us, what was the original goal of the DLP? Was it to address English proficiency?
The Dual Language Program, or DLP, was actually to address English proficiency. The Economic Council, chaired by the Prime Minister, had wanted, as part of Wave 2 of the Malaysia Educational Blueprint, to find a radical approach towards English proficiency. And as a result of a month's brainstorming, we came up with the HIP, which is the Higher Immersive Program, the Dual Language Program, DLP, and English Medium Schools.
So this was a compromise or a continuation of PPSMI, the Teaching and Learning of Science and Math in English?
The DLP was actually a program under MBMBI, which is MBMBI means that Mematabatkan Bahasa Melayu dan Memperkasakan Bahasa Inggeris, which is actually a language program, and it is also optional. It so happens that these are the subjects because we looked at all subjects in the curriculum, and we found that there were many factors. We found that even if you put all the non-core subjects together, such as music, art, PE, if you pile them up together, we didn't get enough hours to make an impact in English. So it was back to core subjects which had more curriculum hours, such as science and math, to have that impact for English. So there was no deliberate attempt to actually bring back science and maths. It so happened that it worked out that way, and also that as far as English is concerned, science and math teachers are the ones who had minors in English, whereas the other subjects did not have teachers who had minors in English, and majority of them couldn't even speak English. So that's the reason.
Because there wouldn't be a need for a dual language program if the PPSMI was to continue. So when did you learn that this program might not proceed?
I wouldn't actually say it might not proceed. There were just hiccups. And this happened around last year because the first cohort in 2016, the announcement of the 300 schools were made in December 2015. And then the second cohort, which is supposed to start in 2017, the announcement of the schools being approved for DLP was made in October 2016. So here we are starting the academic year of 2018. There was still no announcement. So it got us worried because teachers need to prepare themselves, and announcements as important as this should have been made maybe in the fourth quarter of the previous year, so that schools can prepare themselves.
These are the approvals to the applications that has been made by the schools.
Yeah.
What about this blogger who said there was a circular that was going about that said the program might be discontinued?
Well, we don't know who this blogger is, but the way she had worded the text in her blog, it appeared to me that it looked quite genuine because it was very well written and it made sense. So I suspect there was actually such a message going around among the teachers, especially among the DLP teachers, to preempt them for what may happen on the first day of school. So I think it was genuine. It was just an informal kind of message which went around the teachers. Of course, it wasn't official. And of course, teachers should really wait for the official announcement. But even that took quite a while to come.
Why do you think this year has been so late for the announcement to be made?
Well, it's still a mystery to me. Some say it's not an easy decision because there are many factors to consider. But we really don't know whether there was some attempt to sabotage it or what. We really don't know. But what's important is that so many more schools, 214 more schools have been approved for 2018. And the hiccup over Standard 4 has now been resolved. So I think we are going to proceed with a bang for DLP, and we hope that there'll be many more schools applying for next year.
What were the hiccups for this year? Was it not just that some of these schools would be given approval, or that some years, select year groups would not be allowed to continue enrolling in the DLP?
From the start, it's always been the three cohorts to start with, which is Standard 1, Standard 4, and Standard Form 1. And then the following year, you would continue with Standard 2, Standard 5, Form 2, etc. It goes on and on. So the first pilot group of 300 schools, by now in 2018, as far as the primary schools are concerned, you're already rolling out DLP from Standard 1, Standard 6. You start with 1-4 and then 2-5, and this year it's 3-6. So it's complete. As far as primary schools are concerned, for the first cohort of 2016, the cycle is complete, which is fantastic. This involves 300 schools.
Part of the confusion, I suspect, was that they were federal, state and district offices to administer the education program in each state and districts. Who gets to decide whether or not the school would be able to continue with the DLP? Where would the approval have to come from?
I think it's a process. I think, first of all, the schools will apply to PPD, the district office, and I think they will filter, and it goes up to the state and then eventually to the Ministry of Education. I think they have to vet to ensure that the schools meet the criteria, and I think the ministry or some authority needs to go down to the schools and make sure they have to verify the facts that are given by the school. So it's quite a lengthy process, and I think that schools are quite strict towards themselves as they put in the application for DLP.
So they were parents and teachers. Because of this hiccup, said that they haven't received DLP textbooks. What does that mean?
DLP textbooks would be textbooks which have been written in English. And, well, as far as the schools that started in 2016, they're already textbooks anyway from the past year. And similarly with the 2017 group. So
past year, meaning this is
for the ones continuing, for the cohorts continuing after. But it's probably I think it's a matter of logistics only.
Because these books, they are ministry approved and they would be available in bookstores.
Yep.
Okay, and were they written specifically for DLP?
I suspect so. Or even if it wasn't, they would have purchased books. They would have gone through the list of books that are readily available on the shelf, and they would have determined which books to be used by schools. So when we were brainstorming, in 2015, we did look at some textbooks.
Okay. And what are partial DLP schools?
I think it's a term that's been used for schools that have DLP classes as well as non-DLP classes, and that is the norm.
Okay.
We don't expect 100% DLP classes, but there are. In fact, out of 60 over residential schools in Malaysia, a third are 100% DLP schools, So, and there are also some day schools which have 100% DLP schools, which means that all the classes offer these subjects in English. Partial will just mean that there are some some nonce and some DLPs. That's all. It doesn't. It also doesn't mean that there should be a majority of DLP classes. You could just have one DLP class and four non-DLP and vice versa. So the objective is really to give everyone an option to do the subjects in English.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if it's just one. Because even with one, you just need 15 students to agree to do it in English, you can already open up a DLP class. You don't need more than that. It doesn't even need to be a majority.
I'm speaking today to Dato' Noor Azimah Abdul Rahim about the dual language program. I'll ask her whether the program has been a success thus far. BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Troy Antek. My guest today is Dato' Noor Azimah Abdul Rahim, the chairperson of PAGE, the Parent Action Group for Education. We're discussing the dual language programs, the dual language program. How many schools as of today have some form of DLP? Because the report and the news number seems to range between 1,200 and 1,600.
The exact number is 1,429. With this last edition, 2018 edition of 214.
And the most schools has been approved this year, is it 240, you said?
I think the first had almost 300. So wow. The first cohort was much bigger and much easier also, I think.
Easier to
get it off the ground.
So 2 years into this program, how would you describe its progress?
Well, there's the Malaysia Education Blueprint Annual Report, which was 2016, which was released last year. And it shows that the kids have improved significantly in their English proficiency. So I think we have met the objective. And again, I think we have to stress that there's no magical formula. Like any language, one has to immerse and practice the language to be good.
Does it affect this improvement? Did it affect both the rural and urban schools?
Definitely, both ways. Yep. Mm-hmm. There are less students failing and more students getting better results in English.
What about the take-up? Are urban schools more prepared or equipped, or are they more keen to take up this compared to...
I think in terms of keenness, everybody is keen, equally keen, the rural and the urban. Because I think of late, parents have realized the importance of English. You know, and this is the quickest and probably the most economical way for parents to get their children to learn English, you know, through schools. I think the masses have difficulty in helping the children to learn English, and hence they depend so much on schools. And not everybody can, afford private education.
But clearly there are people who are still opposed to it. What are their contention? What does the anti-DLP group... Why do they think it's a bad program?
Well, the anti-DLP group is actually a minority, I believe. And I think the reason is because they feel that their mother tongue is being relegated.
Are there any truth to that?
I don't think so, because if you count the number of hours in the curriculum, you'll find that even if you add English, put together English and the subjects which are being taught in the English language, the mother's tongue still dominates the curriculum in terms of hours. So I don't see it being relegated. In fact, one should look at English as a pragmatic language. This is what will land us the better jobs in life.
In the strategy to strengthen our English proficiency, the MBM-MBI policy to uphold the national language and strengthen English, there are 8 strategies, isn't it?
And you're right.
Are they also opposed to all the strategies in within this policy, or is DLP the poster child, so to speak, of what they don't disagree with?
Oh no, I think they are fine with the highly immersive program, mm-hmm. which is actually enhancing the English language, not just through the English language subject, but the encouragement of speaking English throughout the school. For instance, during co-curriculum or even assembly, you know, the practice of speaking English is more widespread now on the hip. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. In fact, all 10,000 schools should be implementing HIP by this year, which is fantastic. I think the problem is with DLP.
Why were you in favour of this program? What persuaded you that this is something that could work?
Well, Paige was one of the a group of stakeholders who were consulted in 2015. There were about 100 individuals and organizations who were involved in the structure of finding this radical approach towards English language. So we looked at many past programs and policies, and we picked out the best practices of it all. And this is what we put together in the form of the dual language program.
Past as in Malaysia, or you look around the world?
Malaysia and around the world as well.
So there are places where DLP has been implemented and executed very well.
Yes, we have, of course, Singapore, which is generally English medium. We have Brunei, which has been doing this long before us. Of course, there's also Philippines. And we have countries like South Korea, who's very envious of us. In fact, they came to look at us doing science and maths in English at that time. Mm-hmm. And even South Korea being what they are now, young families bring their children here to learn English because they find it economical rather than going to the developed countries. And also, we had Oman looking at our English policies earlier. And also, even in Indonesia, the scientists there were telling us that we should do science and maths in English because, again, they themselves feel challenged because they lack the proficiency.
What about the argument that Japan, Korea and Germany, their science and technology expertise do not suffer because of English language instruction?
Yeah, that's often brought up. But we think that these countries are actually much larger in population. They are homogeneous. They are older as well. So it doesn't mean that they did not learn from the developed countries such as US, UK. They did learn, and then they brought their knowledge back to their countries and they developed it. And this is what we are unable to do at this point because we are young, you know. So which is why we have to copy exactly what the Japanese and the Koreans are doing. They copied and they developed, and we are still trying to copy, not even developing yet.
So schools that will have that wants to implement this DLP, what are the criteria that they have to fulfill in order to get the green light?
Okay, there are four criteria. Firstly, resources. They must have the resources. I suppose this means books and equipment. I don't know what else that they need. And then you have the principal and teacher readiness, which is the most important factor, I think. Teachers must be ready to teach in English. The newer teachers who are coming into the system are actually products of PPSMI, Science, Maths, English. So they're actually more proficient than the time when PPSMI was introduced. You know, so that's a plus point for us. And of course, the fourth criteria, which was, the third criteria. Third criteria is parental consent. So what you have now is parents have to sign a consent form to allow the children to be taught English. This we didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And this is very important. So because the Education Act says that pupils should be educated in accordance with the wishes of the parents. And we are exactly doing that by making parents decide for their children. And of course, the last one is the Bahasa Malaysia criteria, which was only added in later in the stage. It wasn't something that we had brought up at our brainstorm session when we were structuring the DLP. This came in much later. You know, but schools have been able to meet that criteria.
Children who...
Although I don't see the relevance.
Right. children who enrolled in this DLP, if for any reason they're struggling, are they able to go back into Bahasa, medium science and math classes?
I understand that it's not encouraged, and if the child feels that he or she wants to return to the mother tongue, I think there should be an attempt to help the children as much as possible to keep in the English class, and only as a last resort allow the children to return to the mother tongue. But I think once the child has decided to go for English, I think it's the teachers have to help him if he has doubt. And I think it's already the fact that, you know, his parents have agreed for him or her to do English, I think that's already you've already won half the battle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a matter of teachers helping him to make a success of it. I think what's important is that what's happened now is that schools are making the top classes do DLP. Because the top classes are seen as being English proficient already. But really, the purpose of DLP is to get the kids to be better in English. So I think it is going to benefit the kids who are not proficient in English, most.
Right.
And these are the students who are not proficient in English. They are the ones who should be encouraged to do DLP.
Is there a maximum class size in a DLP? Because 15, you said, is the minimum required to start.
Well, the other day when the subject of elite classes came out, I think the ministry made a decision that if classes are as large as 40, we will have two teachers, one senior teacher and one junior teacher. And so it appears that probably 20 to 1 is a good idea, although we think that, you know, if you can have two teachers for 40, why can't you have one class for 20 students rather than put them all together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but the OECD itself recommends 16 to 1.
Right.
So I suppose it would be idealistic for 20 students in one, but I think that's difficult to attain. That's more private school kind of size. And I think that we have tried to limit our classrooms to 35. In the past.
That was a very interesting point, because just like how we stream science and students into science and art streams, and the unspoken context is that those in the science streams are higher performers, do you foresee any effects or ill effects to the child's social context because some are going to DLP, some are going to non-DLP classes to learn science and math in English?
No, I know. I know what you're saying. It's about the segregation thing, isn't
yeah.
it? But in the end, it's the parents' decision. If and I think most of the parents decide for English is because they think it will give the children, their children, better jobs in the end, and probably they will. Be able to, it will be more seamless when they go to Form 1, you know, and also I don't think it can go far wrong with English. Also, it gives the opportunity for a lot of reference material in the future to be available to the child.
Mm-hmm.
So if parents don't see this, then it's tough, because it's the choices will be less, and it's quite obvious, I think.
So currently, it's year one, year two, year four, year five, and form one and form two. Is that the current year groups that are have the options to enroll in DLP?
That would be for the second cohort.
Second cohort.
Yes. For the first cohort, you already have primary school all the way, mm-hmm. 1 to 6. And for secondary school, it would already be year one, year two, year three.
Okay. So this year, it completes the cycle. Everyone...
For the first cohort, yeah. For primary school, yes.
Okay. So going forward, for parents who have kids in schools currently without a DLP, or wants the school to adopt it, or wants to have their child to benefit from this, what can they do?
I think the ministry is helping. They're putting in resources, more teachers for the schools that want to have DLP schools. Obviously, the problem is teacher readiness. So I think when the minister announced the last 214 schools last week, he did say that schools which needed help will be helped. And this is important, because I think the objective is that every one of these 10,000 schools, primary and secondary, should have at least one DLP class, so that no child is left behind. That is the objective. So if all we need is 15 parents to agree for the children, and one class can be raised already.
So moving forward, right, what are the challenges you foresee facing the DLP? And what lessons did we learn from the implementation of science and math in English? Because correct me if I'm wrong, PAGE was set up in response to that, isn't it? When PPSMI was being challenged, and there are people who wanted it to continue, and in your group came about to try to lobby and keep English as one of the medium in the schools.
Yeah, we were formed at the height of the debate on science and maths and English, or PPSMI. But our reason was more because we felt that the parents' voice wasn't heard. Hence, our national society is for parents, without having to consider the viewpoint of the teacher, which is where PTAs are there for. So yes, that's how it was, and we think that it was worth fighting for. And I think that the challenges now with DLP is that I think all schools should be open to DLP classes opening up in their schools. And I think that because it is an optional program, parents can choose between the two. And I think that there should not be any obstacle to DLP, because it is a choice after all. And choice is good. We also want to see that the district offices to be less rigid in implementing DLP. We have we're in the midst of collecting concerns and complaints from parents, whereby, for instance, if a child, we have a case whereby a child was in a non-DLP class in Form 1 because that school was not a DLP school, and then the family had to move, so this child is now in Form 2. And luckily for her, this school is a DLP school. But the principal won't allow her to join the DLP class because she was not in a DLP class in Form 1.
Right.
So this is quite ridiculous. And I think that if the parent consents, I think the principal of that new school should allow the student to pursue the DLP. So we want the principles to be a less rigid, and they should be encouraging the students and not be an obstacle if the parent so chooses.
Thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you.
If you miss any part of this interview, you can download the podcast via the BFM app. Let us know what you think on our Facebook page, BFM, The Bigger Picture. You've been listening to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.